This episode is brought to you by The Jordan Harbinger Show. Want a new podcast to look forward to each week? One that's entertaining, informative, and packed with actionable content? You know you do. And that is The Jordan Harbinger Show, a top-notch podcast named Best of Apple in 2018, and has only gotten better. Jordan goes deep with fascinating people, from authors and scientists to mobsters, spies, and hostage negotiators. During his discussions, Jordan pulls out tactical bits of wisdom for you to use to become a more informed, critical thinker. You'll learn and have a good time. He's very easy to listen to. My two recent favorites are Episode 972, Mustafa Suleiman, The Coming Wave of Artificial Intelligence, and Episode 843, Ellie Honig, How the Rich Get Away with Crime. You can't go wrong adding The Jordan Harbinger Show to your rotation. It's incredibly interesting. There's never a dull show. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show, that's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello, and thank you for listening to The History of World War II podcast, episode 465, Tanks for the Memories. Last time, though the defensive perimeter around Odessa was shrinking, the increased territory of the Axis was covered by Romanian dead, as the Soviet defenders continued to, somehow, find ways of pulling a rabbit out of their collective hat. Yet, the battle was not over. Still, defiance costs. By the end of August 22nd, the 95th Rifle Division was falling back to Bilyayivkaya, just west of Odessa, whereas the 25th Rifle Division was trying to defy this latest series of attacks by the enemy by digging in next to the 95th Rifle. Not that it mattered if all around them gave ground, which they did. Around the same time, the death-defying 1st Regiment of Naval Infantry due north of the city, supported by the 54th Rifle Regiment, took on the Romanian 15th Infantry Division, supported by two German companies. The defenders held them off, but only because of constant reinforcements being fed into the line. Meanwhile, Odessa District Headquarters was becoming concerned because more and more German soldiers were getting involved in the fighting. Still, again, the Naval Regiment held, but they and others were bled in their victory. The next day, August 23rd, the Axis troops came at Schützli again, above and to the northeast of Odessa, close to the estuary. That city was saved, but only because Soviet naval shells could reach the fighting on the ground, and this was fine as long as the Soviet ships were not forced out of the area by Romanian vessels or, more likely, German air power. What Odessa needed most was its own vigorous air defense, but again, places like Kiev were being threatened, and they had to hold. Thus far, the enemy was farthest from Odessa in the north, and even with the help of the naval guns, Odessa was simply running out of bodies to replace those who had fallen. On August 24th, one section was pierced, and there were not enough troops to counterattack. There was nothing for it. The Odessa Defense District ordered a pullback behind the Bolshoi-Adzalitsky estuary, that is, the body of water just north of the city. Now, even here, the enemy was getting closer. More trouble to the north. On the morning of August 25th, the 412th Coastal Battery was forced to destroy its guns and join the naval infantry. They had done stellar work, but again, that mattered little if they were threatened from every direction. And they were. By now, the battle line to the north of Odessa and to its northeast was a hodgepodge at best, as enemy units were coming in from the north, northwest, and northeast. The result? more land was lost and Odessa was more cut off than before. And on August 25th, the attackers moved guns into place in the north, close enough to help shell the city and its port facilities. Obviously, the idea was to cut off the city from receiving any more reinforcements by sea. Of course, the Romanians and Germans would still have to attack, and some of them would die, but it would be the beginning of the end of Odessa. And Prime Minister Antonescu and Berlin had no qualms about sacrificing men. Victory at all cost. And sensing victory, the last week of August was 24/7 combat and death. On August 25th, 9 Axis divisions hit the defensive perimeter from multiple sides. 2 days later, 2 more divisions were added to this. To counter, the Odessa district headquarters passed out ration cards for food, which was getting low, while 4 volunteer detachments from Sevastopol made it in and joined the regiments of the naval infantry. On August 28th, another 1,000 volunteers made it through the shelling of incoming boats to join the fight. What had made the defense of Odessa successful thus far was the solid coordination between the various artillery batteries and infantry. But as August went on, Russian batteries were overrun or simply ran out of shells. There were moments of heroism, sacrifice, and last-second saves, but in this contest of attrition, time was on the side of the Axis. By now, there were no more than 8 combat ships of the Soviets hanging around the coast, supporting the infantry. 50 ships would have been better, but considering that the ground-based batteries were shrinking in number, any help was appreciated. But just as things looked bleak at the end of August, the Stavka performed another miracle. Not that the atheist government would have allowed that term. Scrapping from everywhere, 9,000 more troops were gathered and somehow successfully shipped to Odessa. These men were joined by another 1,600 naval infantry. But this was not an increase of men. They were simply replacing those who had fallen in the last week's fighting. There was nothing sustainable about this system. As the Axis troops closed in, the line between soldier and civilian in Odessa became even more blurred. As that was the case, the Defense Committee ordered that all civilians volunteer in some capacity, looking out for air raids, running food and water to the front line, being lookouts at night so the laborers could get a little rest. Truth be told, not only would the Odessans have done this willingly, they were, in fact, already doing it. It was now just all official. It was, after all, an all-hands effort. Hey everyone, Ray here. I've been using Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. And like many of you, I think about my golden years, and I hope they're golden. I have a Roth IRA with Fidelity and another with Merrill, and I have consolidated them into one hub with Yahoo Finance. There, I have access to expert analysis to help me stay atop this ever-changing world. And with Yahoo Finance at my fingertips, I can focus on my goals of paying off my house and getting ready for, you know, me time. And since Yahoo Finance has been around for more than 25 years, they know what they're doing. It's the number one finance destination, with their independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. With a community of over 90 million users each month, their real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. So, for comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. As bad as the Northern Front was to the west, everyone in Odessa expected the 25th and 95th Rifle Divisions to give way first. They had simply lost too many men and had been fighting for weeks straight. So men up to the age of 55 and what remained of the city's militia were formed up to swell, though swell is not the appropriate word, the ranks of those two divisions. It would not be enough. So, next the workers were to undergo military training at the end of their shift each day in the factory, and when found capable, they would be sent to the front. The sniper Palovchenko and the machine gunner Onilov mentioned last time, the two ladies, this is how they acquired their skills by learning at night. The other workers, too old or infirm, were still affected, though. They had to train as well, but would serve as a reserve force. This reduced workforce managed to turn out even more anti-tank and anti-personnel mines, explosives, wicks for Molotov cocktails, and tank obstacles than had been produced during the first 2 weeks of the invasion. Motivation comes in many forms. As the needs of the fighters increased, given the constant pressure they were under, the factories went to a 24-hour schedule, so fewer people, but working longer. But what the Odessa work authorities came up with next was nothing short of brilliant. Mixing the assembly line construction of Ford with the rulers of France holding contests to get the best out of their artists during the Renaissance, contests were held now to see who could produce the most of something during a shift. This not only helped production, but boosted morale. Communism is one thing, but there's nothing like imminent death to truly demonstrate that all humans are equal. As for the Consomol, or youth members, they worked in the bread factory and were determined not to be the weak link. And as bad as things had been for the Romanians thus far, they were about to get another shock. Needing armor, the tractors of Odessa were overlain with armor and had machine guns or flamethrowers or cannons attached to them. These beasts were ugly, but went through their trials and did better than expected. The Odessans, probably needing a smile, called these gruesome devices NI tanks, or when you translate it roughly, it means not tank tanks, behind the commissar's back. When they started being deployed on September 1st, one can only imagine the look on a Romanian's face as these ugly steel boxes approached the fight. The NI tank was only one of over 10,000 ideas or proposals from factory workers. Considering the cause, they bent their hands and their engineering minds to the construction of weapons. No one was concerned about winning a beauty contest, and all this during daily bombings and shelling. A bomb or shell would land on or near a factory, the dust would settle, and then the dead were taken away, and the survivors got on with it. Their fatigue contributed to their numbness. Oh, and the workers were also producing for the wider war. While the siege of Odessa lasted, the workers produced and sent out 5 armored trains, 55 tanks, 1,262 motors, 965 flamethrowers, more than 300,000 grenades, 250,000 anti-personnel mines, and 90,000 Molotov cocktails. These were sent to Crimea and then by train went to the north and then turned west to help fight who? Why, Army Group South and the Romanians. Another reason for Berlin and Budapest to need Odessa shut down. By the time Odessa fell, the Black Sea Fleet had completed 911 voyages back and forth under air attacks, sea battles, and artillery shells sent their way from land. Yet the scariest moment for Soviet shipping was when the Germans brought experienced torpedo bombing crews from the Mediterranean to assist, and the results were obvious from day one. Back on August 21st, a German torpedo bomber came at the transport ship Bryansk. It was en route to Odessa from Sevastopol, but just before entering the wrecked harbor, the bomber pilot skillfully launched his attack. The transport was hit amidship and went down quickly. It was a complete loss for the defenders. Quickly, Odessa implemented countermeasures, but they could only do so much. They could only be so effective, like having ships leave Odessa at dusk to have all night to reach Sevastopol safely. That is, if they made it out of Odessa waters first. Simply, the Germans were using more of their air power to negate Odessa's shipping, its last link to the outside world. Thus, late August and September saw a massive increase in air battles between Odessa and Sevastopol, and the attrition on the ground was soon matched in the air. Russian pilots sacrificed themselves, but taking out German air crews with them. But it has to be said, the Germans controlled the skies. However, the assistance of the Black Sea Fleet's guns made a difference on the ground. The latter's results were obvious right away. The former, that is, the Masters of the Air, that would take time to reveal. For now, the perimeter was holding, while both sides lost men by the minute. The fighting to the north of Odessa had been 7 miles away. Now, it was only 3 miles, or 4.8 kilometers, away. And on August 28th, the enemy broke through by deploying a massive artillery barrage / airstrikes, followed by infantry charging ahead in the defenders' confusion. As this was seen as the beginning of the end, everything within range the Soviets had of this breakthrough was pointed at the offenders. While the Soviet infantry fought back and artillery gave as good as it got, Soviet escort ships shelled the offenders as they were along the coast. Next, on August 29th, Soviet air crews strenuously tried to take control of the skies. This didn't work out as well as expected, but between some lucky shots and some pilots purposefully ramming their planes into enemy bombers, by the beginning of September, the breach was sealed and the line redrawn. But as always, it was the ground game that mattered most. And as September opened up, Romania had almost half of its entire armed forces focused on Odessa. Some 18 divisions, with 15 of those on the front lines. Still, the defenders, like the beleaguered 25th Rifle Division, the Naval Regiment, and the NI tanks, worked together to keep the enemy back. And then, a new wrinkle. During the night of September 2nd, the Romanians launched their first massive night attack. This took place to the northwest of Odessa and a bit below that. The 95th Rifle Division held its ground by allowing the enemy to get within 100 meters before firing. This not only had a shocking effect on the charging troops, but made sure that fewer bullets were wasted by a miss. Throughout the night, the defensive line swung back and forth, in some places by almost 2 miles, but it never broke. The morning brought relief, but fresh bodies to step over. As this was a near-run thing, the city workers double-timed it, somehow, on the construction of street barricades. Yes, the enemy may break through the line, but entering the city itself would be no mean feat. It would have to be earned. But even here, there would be rings within rings. 3 rings of barricades, in fact. The first, just outside the city, the second, just inside the city, and the last, around the harbor itself. Yes, earned, indeed. As if the night attack by the Romanians did not satisfy them, and it did not, all of their frustration seemed to be let loose between September 6th and September 7th, as nonstop artillery and air attacks were carried out. In Odessa, 59 buildings were destroyed, 92 people were killed. The water line was broke again, which was made even worse by the post-attack fires. But in time, the water would flow once again, the fires extinguished. As for the men and women on the front lines dropping by the minute, the Stavka between September 5th and 12th sent 15,198 men to replace the lost fighters. And this worked, but at no point was any regiment back up to full strength. It was make do with what you have left. Speaking of making do, as this siege had gone on long enough for this to happen, as August slid into September, not only were tractors being turned into tanks, but actual, though damaged, tanks were starting to be repaired enough to be put back in the field. True, the Axis would always have the advantage here, just like the planes, but the average Romanian peasant was just a farmer and would be paralyzed with fear upon seeing this gruesome Soviet tank, even if it had been a tractor in its former life. As for the light Soviet tanks, they, during the early phases of Barbarossa, had been taken out first, given a lack of protection. So the engineers at the January Uprising factory in Odessa started adding on anything to hand that might improve their defensive capabilities. It never really worked according to plan, but it was something for the crews to take comfort in. By the time Odessa fell, 49 NI tanks had been built. During the counterattack of the Soviet 25th Rifle Division on September 1st, three NI tanks had been included. As this worked, other regiments and divisions wanted their own NI tanks, but these would mostly be grouped together and kept as a fire brigade, the idea being to rush wherever they were needed the most. When the NI tanks returned to Odessa after this battle, one tank had the remains of a 45mm shell that had gone through one side and out the other. Fortunately, it did not detonate, and no one inside was hurt. When the men of the 161st Rifle Regiment heard this, and they had believed that by now they had seen and done everything possible in war, they asked the commander of this pierced tank, "Why did you keep going on even though a shell had just gone through you?" Having lived in his own hell for the last 2 months, the tank commander coolly replied, "The enemy can kill me only with a direct hit." This did not make much sense to the infantrymen, as there had been a direct hit. And then they realized the tank commander meant, literally, hit his body. By the night of September 20th, there was enough repaired or modified tanks to go on the offensive. They set out after dark, their first night attack, which was due west of the center of Odessa, towards Veliki Dalnik, just outside the city's limits. Now, the Odessa district commanders knew that the NI tanks were not heavy hitters. They lacked serious firepower, but were loud and ugly. Why not use that? As the NI tanks charged at the Romanian line, their newly installed sirens and other noisemakers, besides bright lights, were activated. What it couldn't do to one's flesh, it could do to one's senses. The Romanians, terrified, panicked, and retreated from their trenches. As Axis pressure to the north was still a major threat as well, it was decided to try these former tractors out there, but they would only be a part of a larger counterattack. The 421st Rifle Division, along with the 157th Rifle Division, the latter supported by 15 tanks, started to move out. But then it was decided that the 421st would hold back a little, just in case things did not go well. But the tanks did their part. The question was, did the noisy contraptions scare the Romanians here as well, or did they distract them enough so the Soviet infantry could deal with the enemy in a more traditional way? Either way, the Axis forces directly in front of this attack retreated at least 5 kilometers, but the tank crews knew enough not to go after them, as they would eventually be surrounded and annihilated. As for the coastal army, they were also given a group of tanks and, on October 2nd, headed out due west of Odessa. The breathing space created just a few days ago was reoccupied by enemy troops. First, an artillery barrage to help the Romanians think this was going to be a normal, if the word normal can be used, counterattack. But after the shells stopped falling, about 35 armored vehicles of some kind or another dashed at the enemy. The infantry, the Soviet infantry, stayed close as long as they could, but with the Romanians fleeing, the tanks poured on the speed and kept going. Soon, Romanian artillery was come upon by the tanks, and it was unmanned. As these were former tractors, they towed the enemy's guns back to Odessa, along with captured machine guns and mortars. And yet, it has to be said that the time of the tanks, in whatever condition, was short-lived. Simply, there weren't enough of them, nor enough experienced tank crews, nor enough time to build more. But they had given hope when hope was needed. Still, the end was coming near, not that the defenders could know the details. In plain terms, the enemy was too numerous, too close, and too determined to ever stop trying. Yes, Romania had lost a lot of men up to this point, and they would lose more, but they would not stop coming, as they were not allowed to stop. Time would do the rest. Greetings, everyone, from Central Virginia. So as you can tell, we're getting close to the end because, I don't want to give it too much away, but we're getting close to the end. Anyway, so I'd like to thank some members and those who have donated. Let's see here. My latest member is James Anderson from El Paso, Texas. And as far as those who have donated, let's see here. There's Roland Rose. Roland, I had three. He'll know what that means. Ralph from San Francisco and Mark P. Komen. So thank you very much, gentlemen. I certainly do appreciate it. And we'll be back with the probably, final two episodes of this. And then we'll move on to Kiev and see how Army Group Center had to help Army Group South lock this down. Take care, everyone.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.